Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I'm here to help you make peace with food and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. So if you've listened to the show before, you are probably familiar with some of my regular callers, Larry from Burbank and Nick, as well as Brian from Chicago, and occasionally Giovanni. So today I invited all of them to be in the studio with me, and everyone but Brian from Chicago came because it was a little bit too much of a commute for him to get to LA from Chicago. But Larry from Burbank, Nick, and Giovanni are here with me in the studio, and we're going to talk about what it's like to be a guy dealing with body image, food issues, weight issues, appearance issues, what it's like to be a man in this society we live in that's so appearance-driven, and all those other weighty issues that aren't really being talked about out there in the world. That's why we're talking about them here on the Dr. Nina Show. So welcome, guys. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Mighty happy.
So maybe we can start with introductions. Maybe you'd like to say a little bit about, you know, yourself, what drew you to the show, what you're dealing with, and what you'd like to change. Let's start with Giovanni.
Yes, so I'm Giovanni. I'm in my 20s, live in Los Angeles, and yeah, I think it's been like the last 10 years really that it's been much more within the media, the importance of the artificial importance of, you know, having a six pack and being like super fit and chiseled and having that type of anxiety of double guessing yourself when you just want to go to the beach or go to a water park or something. Yeah, so it's definitely been something that's started to haunt me even more so, and I know a lot of guys can relate to that now.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I'm Larry. I am indeed from Burbank. For I don't know how many decades, I've tried to lose weight by dieting. The other terms are food plan or diet plan, or for only $59.95, eat this sugar and lose weight. And it took me a long time to figure out that it's got nothing to do with consuming food and everything to do with psychology. So I'm glad to be here.
I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, my life has been a diet. I've always tried every diet. I've every day as a child to an adult, I stayed on a scale. I would go on the scale in the morning 3 or 4 times. And when I come home, I get on the scale again, and my life was a scale. And I learned to realize that that's not right. And to become an adult, a senior.
How old are you, Nick?
I just turned 69 last week.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. So I'm and the best I've been in my whole life, especially with eating. I mean, I don't get on a scale. And it's really interesting, about a month and a half ago, I was feeling that, God, I'm heavy. I've gained weight. And my first feeling was, oh, I got to get on a scale and see what I weigh. And that'll tell me how much weight I've gained, or I was just frustrated, I'm heavy, and this and that. And all of a sudden, I drifted into a different space, and I didn't stand on a scale. And I just feel that I lost weight. And I didn't have to go to the scale to tell me that I lost weight. I knew I lost weight, and I know that I ate differently, and it's a great feeling. It's a great feeling. I didn't have to go to the damn scale or whatever. It was just a mind thing. I just I took care of myself.
Well, and that's such an important point, which is that the scale cannot dictate your self-worth. It really has to come from within, not from a piece of metal and plastic that does not know and cannot measure your value. So, thanks, guys. And we have, like, every generation here of guys. And I'm interested in your perspective on what are the pressures about body image, about appearance, about about what you look like. From, you mentioned, Giovanni, you mentioned, you know, having a six pack and all that. What are your perspectives about the pressures on guys on appearance in our world today? Because there's a lot of women who think guys don't worry. They just go and work out and they don't even give it another thought, and they eat burgers and they whatever. My friends have said this. And I'm like, no, guys are people too. Guys actually do have fears and concerns and pressures. So maybe we can speak to that. And if anyone out there would like to join the conversation, you're welcome to call us here at 818-602-4929. But let's talk about, what about those pressures?
They're consistent and not talked about as much because it's a stigma of this kind of machismo society that we're starting to crack through now, where guys are actually allowed to talk about feelings without being insulted. At the same time, women are being empowered, so it's a nice little dynamic that's breaking through. But it's certainly not talked about because... I think mainly because it's a sensitive insecurity issue, and the last thing any guy wants for people to think is that they're insecure. And so having that kind of like beast mode type of like, oh, well, I eat everything and I still have a good body, or, well, I don't care. It's not true. Some of the most vocal people, guys that say that, are actually kind of the most insecure and hate themselves. And at the end of the day, I think it's about self-love. My oldest brother was morbidly obese for years, and up until a year and a half ago, he's lost, not that the number matters, but 140 pounds, which is the size of an average human. And he did it through just eating right and exercising. And my parents for years were like, why don't you just get operated, get a lap band or get liposuction or just get surgery? And he's like, Mom, because it would fix the outside, but it wouldn't fix the inside, my mind, what's in my head, my thoughts, my behavior, how I see myself. And so he's like, I have to do it the natural way. And he's lost all that weight while still having treats. We'll go to Thai food, and he'll have Thai food and whatnot. It's just about balance. And throughout this process that he's gone through, he's learned to rewire his brain and love himself. And that's kind of the solution, which is to think better of yourself,
And that really illustrates what I say a lot, which is it's not what you're eating that's the problem, it's what's eating at you. And until you deal with what's eating at you, nothing with food can permanently change. Before we went on air, we were talking, and Larry, you mentioned that there are these images now for guys like The Rock, or kind of you were drawing you were differentiating between G.I. Joe, which maybe was what you grew up with, which was a very different symbol of masculinity than The Rock. Can you speak to that a little bit?
I'm actually very I should be more grateful for the fact that I grew up in the 70s when G.I. Joe looked like an average human being. But it's not about not G.I. Joe. If you look at G.I. Joe now, looks like he works out 26 hours a day and shoots up on a regular basis. I can picture a little boy feeling like garbage because he doesn't look like G.I. Joe, and that societal pressure is reprehensible. Especially with this 24-hour news cycle, you see images all the time, and especially in L.A. on the left and the right coast.
Well, you see it now. I call it the Twilight Effect, which happened in 2007 when the first Twilight movies came out, and it was like the beginning of like the washboard abs phenomenon. And now, you know, with the Zac Efrons and the Avengers, and it's more so you see more guys kind of in a half-naked light than women now in movies and music videos. Like, it's all about the guy being shredded and the girls admiring them. And I think in the 80s and 90s and early, it was, like, reversed. You know?
And also, apparently, no guys have chest hair, right? Like, what's that about? There's a backlash now. People are... I'm sorry.
Well, you know, speaking of body hair, I have been stopped on the beach and checked for an opposable thumb. So it kind of runs in the family. Actually, that was a body image thing going way, way back. And indeed, the waxing and all of that. Hadn't thought of that until just now. But yeah, there's that too. And if you're not ripped, even into your 50s, you're a little less worthy.
According to whom?
According to the mass media. And according to way too many men and way too many women.
So that women start to buy into that image and start to expect that guys should look like these either very photoshopped or very steroided types of gym rat kind of guys.
Or just guys who'd never have a cookie in a year, you know?
It's these athletes, too. I mean, all about, you know, same thing you see with these athletes. They don't wear shirts, and they go out, and they see these little kids. And these little kids see them, the basketball players, the football players. You know, they see these bodies, and that's what they want.
Well, how does it make you feel, you specifically? And we're talking about society, and we're talking about kids today, and we're talking about women. But how does it make you guys each feel that this is being held up as the masculine ideal?
You know, if this were 2018 and I was in my 20s, I think it would be very, very serious, very significant. Now that I'm 59, it doesn't bother me nearly as much, if at all. But I'm aware of the nature of obsession. As I say, I'm glad I grew up when appearance was less important, and you didn't have to, you know, lift weights and all of that. As far as athletes, they make millions of dollars to be ripped. That's functional, but they can just as easily run around with their shirts on. So. I was thinking, the whole idea of saying that men, it's not as much of an issue with men, body image, is like saying for C-level executive women, well, money really doesn't matter as much. And as such, they're devalued literally. So think about that if you don't think men, it's not an issue with men as far as body image.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a little bit more woke now, if you will, in terms of not letting it affect me as much, and knowing that it's just an image of a person. I'm a screenwriter, and so I have some actor friends, and some of them are really successful and quote unquote famous that they come out on TMZ shirtless, and it's only certain months of the year. Like, most of the time they eat just as normally as I do, and it's just because they're not shooting. It's just part of their job. But when someone looks at, like, before I knew them, when I looked at their picture, I'm like, oh, they look like that all the time. And that's just not true. It's just part of their image of whatever they're shooting or promoting.
Ooh, the secrets are coming out.
It's true. It's all those Avengers and maybe not Zac Efron, but most of the other ripped guys, they're not like that at all year round. It's just for a specific job, and then they go back to just being, you know, regular guys.
It reminds me of a book I saw. I work at the local library, and I think the book is called, and I'm not making this up, The High School Reunion Diet. So women go on crash diets to lose that last 15 so they can look good for their high school. If I don't do 1,000 sit-ups a day and I have a shoot, and I'm not an actor, you know, if I'm not ripped by then, I'm out of a job. Mm. You know, so it works. Kind of a similar thing.
Yeah, I think people can relate to that for, like, weddings, because weddings are almost like life reunions. So they're like, oh, my God, I got to look good for Carol's wedding. And both men and women do the crash diets and whatnot, and they end up not enjoying the wedding and not enjoying the anticipation of the wedding because they're just so in their heads about how they think. And 9 times out of 10, people don't care. People are just more worried about what they're doing or their significant other doing than how someone they see once every 3 years is doing. You know, most of it's in our heads.
Or what the experience is rather than what other people look like in the experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is also, maybe this is most prevalent in L.A. I have a friend who goes back and forth living part-time in New York and part-time here, and she says that when she's out and she kind of eavesdrops on conversations, if she's, like, waiting for someone at a restaurant, she'll listen to people talk. And in L.A., people are talking about, oh, my God, I shouldn't be eating this, but I only what are you having? Oh, I've been so good. And they're talking about food and weight and what they look like. And in New York, she's like, nobody's talking about that. They're talking about, like, well, you know, what do you think about what's going on in Washington? Or maybe it's the places she hangs out. But I think there's a little something to that we've become so focused on what we look like that we are forgetting who we are.
I think that people drop, especially men, speaking of image, drop $300,000 for a car, not to go fast, but to look good at a stoplight.
And can I tell you from the women's perspective, when we see that guy with the $300,000 car, we do not think, wow, that dude is hot. We think, wow, that dude is overcompensating. Just saying, dudes out there driving the $300,000 car, we all think you have small dicks. Okay.
Present company excluded. That guy, he thinks he's Johnny Blow Dry, and you think he's, you know, just right. Some shallow whatever.
That's very funny.
So, what do you wish would change? In my office, I have a magic wand, and I am told that it works only very slowly. So, if I had my magic wand here and I could wave it, you know, over you, and things would change right away, what would you like to see different in our society when it comes to this subject?
I would like to see Donald Trump do a news conference in his thong. I think right there, bam, that would change everything. It would be a sea change, and it would take all the pressure off of guys. He can be rich. And I'll say this, I think that this may be a function of my money issue, as in very little, but I think that a fat wallet is highly attractive. More so than, you know, sit-ups or whatever. But I think, you know, maybe seeing more average guys, God forbid, with their shirts off, and fewer superhero movies. I believe since 9/11, people want to get protected, and that's behind the whole superhero thing. So we've shielded ourselves in battleship-sized SUVs and muscles. And just to see more average guys at the beach.
I think it starts in the home, right? It starts small and then it kind of goes big, I think, for real change. My brother and his wife have two boys. One is just naturally very thin and kind of fit, and the other's 11 years old, very chunky, you know? He likes his sweets. And I was his body type that way, and then, you know, I stretched and whatnot, but she's a therapist, and the way she talks to him is completely different from the way my parents talk to me. This was obviously in the 90s, before we didn't think words could hurt kids and hit their subconscious. So when I was a kid, it was, you know, squeezing my belly and being like, oh, look, you're so doughy or pudgy, or like carefully eating this cupcake, yeah. Or, you know, like, oh my God, you're so round. And whereas my sister-in-law's concern is not demeaning him or critiquing the body, and more so critiquing, you know, the importance of having a balanced meal, the importance of not having too much sugar. So it's
health.
The health. And, mm-hmm. And so the critique is exterior. It's the food outside of you, not the body that's attached to you. So I think it's having parents and friends, and not so much critiquing so much the exterior. And if you're concerned about someone other than yourself, it's about their health and not so much what they look like.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I think it also speaks to our relationship to ourselves. It's like when Nick was talking earlier, you were saying that whereas before you would go on the scale and you would beat yourself up, you had developed this kind of kinder, gentler way of relating to, you know, the scale, and you just made healthier choices. That we all have to not only be nicer to each other, but also to ourselves. Because when you are a friend to yourself, then you're going to be able to calm yourself down, soothe yourself, reassure yourself. You're going to feel better with words, and then you don't need to focus on food, weight, body image, and so forth as a way of coping.
Also, really, when I was a child, they would call me chubby. They would call me, like you said, those names. And it was never, I didn't have a chance to say, gee, that bothers me. I'm hurt by that. And I wish you wouldn't say that to me. I couldn't make those words possible for them. They would just, it would be a funny thing. Oh, come here, chubby. Come here, chubby. So even relatives would say that to me. Friends.
Ouch.
Kids at school. Chubby. And they think that's funny, and it really hurt. And then I'd fight it with food. And, you know, that because the food made me feel good. And that's how it all gets in a circle, and that's where I really got chubby. And it was a terrible thing. I mean, being with friends and calling me names, and I didn't fight back.
You actually, from what you've said and the many times that you've called here, you interpreted that as meaning that there was something wrong with you.
Exactly.
And so you came to think, oh, if you're heavier, you're somehow shamed, unlikable, unlovable,
right.
And that the only way to assure that people are going to like you and love you and, you know, that you're going to have good relationships is to be thinner.
Thinner, or...
Which is why you were so focused on the scale.
And funny. I was very, very funny. So that's where they would let me stick around because, boy, Nick, you're really funny. And I was funny. And that's how people stayed with me, you know, and didn't kick in the food, but, oh, he's so funny. Oh, you're so funny. So people that remember me from years ago is... I was a funny guy, but actually I was just doing it so they would like me.
It's the Wizard of Oz syndrome, right? People put on a mask of some kind. I'm this. You know, don't see the person behind the mask, behind the curtain, the real me. And we get this idea that, especially for guys, that anything human, emotional, real is somehow bad, and that this notion of masculinity equaling strength, and strength meaning the absence of feelings, is also just so detrimental to the soul of anyone, but especially guys, because then there's just shame for recognizing that you have feelings.
I remember when I was a kid, I think this happened at least once, I would cry, and my dad would say, "Stop pissing with your eyes."
Wow.
Those scars run deep. And then there were times when I would, like, see a doctor or get hurt, and whoever was caring for me would say, "You're a big guy. You can handle it." It's like my pain threshold is higher
because
I'm tall.
Don't be a baby.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I learned to be a robot, and it got me to the food. Maybe I'm more human. I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't fun.
Well, when people can shame you or mock you or make you feel bad, you know, why would you turn to people for comfort? Food represents comfort in our psyches, and so when people are unpredictable or unavailable or just plain mean, mm-hmm. food becomes a source of comfort.
When you have a abusive father and a food obsessive mother, that's gas on a fire, you know.
I think as a solution, going back to what you were saying about what we could change, I don't think you're going to convince Marvel to not have the superheroes shirtless or Zac Efron from doing, you know, these type of movies. But going back to a second grade advice, the whole keep your eyes on your own paper still holds true today with, you know, to compare us to despair, you know, and just... a friend of mine says, you know, you're comparing your behind the scenes to someone's highlight reels. And just know that that's not a human being, what you're seeing in the magazines. It's an image. It's selling something. It's not, a human behind it. So just knowing, you know, starting to self-love, loving every flaw, because every single person has 1,000 flaws just as much as you do. Not comparing and just, you know, sticking to yourself.
Yeah, that's a great way to live your life, whatever your gender. It's funny, I remember seeing a movie with Cary Grant in it, some old movie, when he was at the height, he was the biggest movie star, the biggest heartthrob, the biggest, ooh, Cary Grant, you know, and he takes his shirt off, or he's in an undershirt or something, and apparently when this happened, it was scandalous. How times have changed. But he's totally, like, not ripped at all. And it was almost shocking to see, like, this normal, regular guy instead of some, you know, actor dude who spent a lot of time in the gym. And this was sexy.
I remember Marlon Brando in A Streetcar Named Desire. He had the famous shirtless scene, and everyone's like, oh, my God. And he just looks fit. There's no, like, crazy curves in his abs or chest or arms. He just looks like a well-built guy. I don't know where we kind of just went to the extreme.
Sean Connery of James Bond fame is considered macho. If you look up macho in the thesaurus, it says John or Sean Connery. He used to be a bodybuilder before he was an actor. And if you Google Sean Connery bodybuilder, you'll see an average-sized guy with a little bit of muscle. It's what you see every day walking down Ventura, just a little bit bigger, but he looked average. That was a bodybuilder. Then now they have their own zip code. They're that big. It's ridiculous.
So how does this affect you as guys with this sense of an impossible image that is held up as the ideal? How does it affect you? You know, what does it mean to you?
You know, at 59, it doesn't bother me nearly as much. But thinking about it, you know, I'm 6'4". I used to be 185 and in pretty good shape. And I've got 50 pounds on my midsection. It would be a lot nicer if I didn't have that. And, you know, it's just, I assure you, if it were 40 years ago, I think I might have been dealing with some measure of ongoing devastation. So I think age is a function, you know.
What about you, Nick?
I think that this is my life. I'd like to be more in fit just to feel better. But I can live the way I'm doing now. I like myself. Health-wise, I'd like to be fit, more fit. And that's what I'm shooting for at this point.
So it's about health, not about image.
Yeah.
All right, so that's at 69. And at 20-something, you know, that's what you're searching for, too, like a way to feel good about
you. In high school, I was really fit, but not for a goal or to impress anyone. It was just, you know, I was part of the volleyball team, and then going to the gym with my friends was like a social aspect. So, and I would eat whatever my parents cooked. So I was very fit, but very happy. And then when I went to college and after graduating, I got into a really bad eating disorder and started gaining weight and losing weight and gaining weight. And now I'm starting to go back to a quote-unquote fit lifestyle, but it's well-balanced and it's for myself, not for anyone else. Because when I would try to lose weight in previous years, it would be to get validation from other people or for an upcoming wedding or a graduation or event or to impress a specific person. And now it's for myself. It's because I enjoy going hiking or going running or lifting weights, or, you know, it feels good to eat healthy. You know, literally feels good. You know, do I love, I love sweets, I love cookies, I love cake. Of course I have that stuff as well. But it's not a punishment, and it's not a wave of guilt as how it used to be, because I know I'm doing my body right by balancing it with healthy, well-rounded meals.
Right. So it's about how you feel health-wise, not how you look.
Right.
Yeah. So you guys, what do you think, and I'm going to invite any listeners to call in at 818-602-4929. Join us if you wish. We're having such an interesting conversation. So, okay, I've got three guys in the room. What is the, insert joke here, what is the biggest misconception you think women have about being a guy?
For once, I'm speechless. I will mull that over. I don't know.
I think that the common misconception that women have is they always, I always hear girls say, oh, guys could eat everything. Guys could eat anything. Guys could eat anything. And it's like, no, it's a calorie is a calorie, no matter who, you, what person, you know, what gender you are. Yeah, that's probably one of the big ones.
Yeah.
Oh, you lose weight so much quicker. Guys lose so much weight quicker than girls. And every body type, every ethnicity, you know, every person is just genetically different, you know? And so kind of having that whole overall thing, because I often see, you know, girls be like, oh, you're so lucky you're a guy. Like, you guys can lose weight in a week. It's like, it takes us so much longer. And it's like, no, you don't know what battles, mental or physical, another person's going through, you know.
Right.
So labeling them that is not right.
Yeah, and also the idea that guys don't struggle with body image, you know. That's part of why I wanted you guys to be on the show, because it's simply just not true.
It is true. It's just not as well understood, because guys are not supposed to have feelings, and if they feel less than, it's even worse than not working out, you know, so it sort of builds on itself. My understanding now is it's a lot more prevalent, but it's just still not the right thing to share it as openly, and maybe hopefully this will help a little bit.
And that's the media, too. Like, you'll have Demi Lovato and Mindy Kaling and Jennifer Lopez, like a range of different women, famous women, and of different body types talk about weight and self-image and looks, whereas you never hear guys in the public media talk about how they look and the differences of body image and that type of, like, you know, putting a negative onto that. You never see that.
Well, yeah, you guys are trailblazers, right? You are here talking about this in a very candid way, and so I salute you. But yes, I remember I was interviewed by this guy, John Buchanan. He had a podcast called Let's Reverse Obesity, and we were talking about, anyway, men and feelings. And what he said was, he was saying, so what you're saying is people eat because there's something going on with them, like in their emotions, or, and I said, emotions or conflicts, or it could be lots of different things, but it has to do with what's going on within them. And he goes, well, I don't have, he's like, I'm a dude. I don't have feelings. And he was serious. He was totally serious. I'm like, well, yeah, dude, you do have feelings. You are human, and humans have feelings. And if you don't pay attention to them, there's going to be a problem.
Well, I think the world is the way it is. And I mean that in a bad way. The world is in turmoil because a lot of the male leaders in every part of the world, in every culture, in every country, probably don't have the best way of dealing with their feelings and whatnot. And so, yeah, you're seeing the effect of guys not, you know, really being honest with how they feel and how to express it and how to deal with it in a larger scale.
You mean you can't tweet away your feelings?
No.
Speaking of which, the toddler in the Oval Office I think he takes comfort in the fact that his missiles are bigger than Kim Jong-un's. That's not by accident. And, to Giovanni's point, if women had more power in the world, we'd have more severe shouting matches. And I don't want to overgeneralize, and fewer, dead people, fewer people in Syria getting gassed and all that because of ego. I remember there was a Ken Burns documentary about Vietnam. The last 40,000 American guys who died died because the idiots in office didn't want to lose to save face. It cost 40,000 lives, and I don't think women would do that.
No, I was thinking about the play Lysistrata, the Greek play in which the women just refused to have sex with the men until the war is resolved. And boy, was that war resolved fast. Sorry, you were going to say something, Nick?
You know, on TV, they have all these ads that, lose 30 pounds in 30 days or whatever the situation is. And it's geared to women, but they do have men in there. Being weak is ridiculous to go and try to lose weight like that. I mean, that won't work.
Exactly.
But this is $1 billion business.
$60 billion business.
And you see these ads every single day, every night, so on, I give you this, and I promise you'll lose this amount in 30 days. And I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
I hope listeners don't think that we're completely dismissing looks as if it doesn't matter. I mean, look, when you dress well for an interview, you're going to feel better than if you go dressed as a slob. I think the goal is not about losing weight. It's about rewiring it to being healthy and feeling like your best self.
It's about,
it's the combination of everything.
It's challenging the idea that the only good you is a thinner, buffer you.
Right.
And
putting all your self-worth on that. And when it's really your whole self, your soul, your mind, your body.
And what these diets sell, and why the $60 billion diet industry wants to keep perpetuating itself, what they're selling is the idea of transformation. If you look like this, your life will be this.
Right.
And what you look like and what your life is are actually not that. There is no correlation, because you might feel good for a while, but eventually, unless, like in your brother's case, unless you deal with what's eating at you or why you don't feel good about yourself, losing weight will not help.
Statistically, Americans are the best at losing weight the fastest compared to every other country, and we're the worst at maintaining that weight loss. It's because we're not dealing with what's eating at you, as you say, how you feel about yourself, and just putting all the emphasis on getting the result without the journey.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, well, that's exactly what your program or what you preach is exactly that. Is that you just don't go and starve yourself for 3 weeks and lose 20 pounds and then go back to your normal life and think you're not going to gain the weight back.
Yeah, I mean, there's this fantasy that if you look a certain way, your life will change. That if you're shy, you'll become confident.
Right.
If you're, you don't have enough friends, suddenly friends will be everywhere. If you don't have a boyfriend or girlfriend, there, you'll have one. That they're selling transformation of your life through change of your body, and it's a lovely illusion, but an illusion it is.
I think it might be a function of, since TV really took off, we have seen more people more, and as the media has exploded, we see each other on screen. We can have our own YouTube station. And as that's happened, appearances and outward appearance has become paramount. I think if we didn't have all that stuff, it would be less of a factor.
Yeah, and also before we started on air today, you were talking about men and hair.
Yes, the fact that I don't want to talk about that tells me I should, and that it points to the obsession, not of weight, but a significant obsession with another body part from the scalp up. I remember when I was a teenager, I remember that night, Saturday night in August of 77, going on 19, I noticed that some hair at the fringes of my scalp right in front, a few might be a little shorter and a little blonde, and I thought within the year I'd be bald. And this was at a time when you were not bald. You had the best comb over or the best wig or scalp reduction surgery. And I remember when I was diagnosed with bladder cancer, my knees turned to jelly, and it felt worse with that, the obsession with having a full head of hair. And that lasted about 20 years. And then I had, with a full head of hair, I had, when my hair gets longer, it rolls up on the sides like a window shade, sort of the Bozo look. And back then, you had to, there's pictures of that. You can go back, hair was longer, and the idea of walking around high school with my full ear exposed was be like without pants. And I remember carrying a mirror in my pocket so I can go in the bathroom and check with the mirror in the bathroom whether or not my ears were sticking out. When, if it does, I would be devastated. So I can't really relate to having 40 pounds on my midsection, but the obsession itself, as I say, I'm glad I'd rather be 29 than 59, but I'm glad that I lived then and not now, if that kind of obsession applies to men and boys in terms of weight.
I mean, there's so much pressure on guys. So look a certain way, be ripped, be buff, be impervious to feelings, and be successful. I know, Larry, you've talked on the show about that, but there's also a specific pressure on guys to be financially buff, and how that affects your self-esteem and how that affects your, sense of self and relationship to others. I mean, I think that, maybe you guys can all speak to that, because that seems to be, among my friends, a real pressure, that if you're not earning some crazy, crazy amount of money, that somehow you're less than.
For me, it's the kind of pressure that is hard to describe. I think primarily having been without, and I think that's been in the toxic service of remaining without in general. But I would, right now, if you could wave your magic wand and turn me to 350 pounds and be financially successful, I would agree before the sentence is over.
Yeah, I think it's putting your self-worth in things outside of your personality and how good of a person you are and how much you give and your contribution to society and to your friends and to your family and to yourself, putting it on your body or your finances. Again, there's nothing wrong with being fit. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be financially successful, to aspire to be XYZ in whatever career that you're in. It's about not putting your self-worth on just that, and that I can't be happy until I have that, or I won't be loved or worthy of being loved until I have that. And that's the problem, is that a lot of people have that mindset.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's very, very, very important. It makes you feel better and makes you more wanted. And I continue to try to make more money. And it's probably one of the most important things in my mind.
But do you have the sense, you said it makes you more wanted, so do you have some sense that your likability is also tied to your bank account?
In my situation, no, it's not.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing to want money, but as more money, I mean, I don't know anyone who doesn't want more money,
right,
no matter how much money they have. But it's about, as Giovanni said, it's not healthy to think that that will, that a higher level of financial stability will equal a higher level of self-esteem.
Yeah. It's working on yourself, you know, and being grateful for what you have, and you know, giving, you know, whether it's volunteer work or just overall trying to be a good person and be grateful for the life you've been given. Because I can think of three guys, one in college, one that's a friend now, that they both grew up so wealthy and they're so good looking. It's like you would think, like, oh my God, they're so happy. And one of them is just so depressed and the other is just so insecure. And I'm like, God, you could have what people want and still be miserable. So it's about working on yourself. And until I really came across these two guys, that I was like, all right, just work on yourself, you know, and be happy.
I remember the actor, I believe it was Owen Wilson, and forgive me if I'm wrong, tried to kill himself at one point. Mm-hmm. And again, forgive me if I'm wrong, but look at the guy, look at what he earns. Look at how the world sees him. He must have been miserable. And I, again, if I'm wrong on that, you know, but that's my understanding.
Well, I mean, think about Heath Ledger. Not that he purposely killed himself, but there are a lot of people who turn to drugs and alcohol, and you'd think that they would be on top of the world. It just really underscores the idea that happiness is an inside job. People think, well, when I'm happy, then, or when I lose weight, then I'll be happy, or when I make that deal, then I'll be happy, or when I.
Yeah,
but you got to be happy no matter what. And actually, when you're happy, you're more likely to lose weight, more likely to get that raise or whatever it is that you want.
Totally.
If how do I say this? As far as money, I feel that people value me less only because I value myself less, and that comes out. If I could be objective, I don't think they would. I've got some friends who do very well, and they just come on over. You know, it doesn't matter to them. It matters to me so much that it affects my how I act or whatever in the world.
How people treat you is often a reflection of how you treat yourself.
Absolutely.
Yes, because if you are denigrating yourself and thinking less than yourself of yourself, it's very easy to imagine other people are looking at you through your eyes. But similarly, when you feel good about yourself, it's a lot easier to imagine that people feel good about you.
I'm picturing the sculptor, the avant-garde sculptor who makes $15,000 a year and lives in a single, and he's happy. He's happy. So maybe I'd rather go back to my weight and make $15,000 as a happy sculptor. And I think to Giovanni's point, it's not about what you make, but do what you love, the money will follow. If you make $10 million a year and you love what you're doing, it's what you're doing, not the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends who went to law school because that's what you were supposed to do, right? Go to law school, and then they became lawyers, and they got into that law firm thing where they had no life, and they were making gobs of money, but they had no life, and they were miserable. And a lot of them stopped being lawyers because they chose life over this doing what they were supposed to do to make money and pay the mortgage and do all that. You have to be true to yourself, and when you're true to yourself, you take care of yourself, and when you take care of yourself, you're not using food to cope, and life is good.
Indeed. Yeah, you should have more of those magic wands you talk about and use them, and it may hit critical mass, but life is an inside job, and it's not the clothes, not the money, not the phallic symbol on wheels. It's from the inside out, and I'm learning that a little late and the hard way, but I'm starting to get it.
Sounds like you've gotten it.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Okay.
Guys, anything else you'd like to add?
I hate to put Giovanni on the spot, but my understanding is he wrote a screenplay about his situation, and you can smack me after the show, but I don't know if you want to mention that.
No, I have a screenplay called Insatiable Me. It's about a frat guy with an eating disorder who goes to an all-female treatment center and discovers his first love and his first loss and his friendship, and that's being read by some great a great director and a great actor for it. So yeah, we shall see.
It's a great subject for a good reason. And like I say, if I put you on the spot, you can hit me over the head with a sugar-free donut after we wrap.
Larry, have you ever considered a career in PR?
The way, spontaneous things I say. I actually wrote some spec ads that I will maybe fax you at some point that prove conclusively that I should not be in PR.
But. I will take your word for it, but not from what I just saw. That was PR at its finest. So
we have an understanding that I get 20% of the gross. He doesn't know that yet.
Thank you for the plug.
Well, and thank all of you guys for being here today and talking about this, these topics that are not often talked about. And I appreciate your candor and your openness and your willingness to be vulnerable and real and so thoughtful about this topic. So thank you so much. In fact, that just deserves like this. Thank you. I just do love my sound effects. And that is our show for today. Thank you so much for joining me here on LA Talk Radio. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. You can also listen later on iTunes, The Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio. And if you love the show, please leave us a review, because the more reviews we get, the more people we reach. The more people we reach, the more people we help. Have a great week, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.